When was the last time you darned a pair of socks? Yes, we know. When you frock shop, do you stop to ask, where did this come from? Who made it? How? With what? Well, thought so, but if you did ask, would they know? Now, all this week, the fashion industry's been marking Fashion Revolution Week. You knew that. It's asking consumers to think more carefully about the clothes they buy and celebrate ethical and sustainable slow fashion. Melinda Tuali is the Australian convener of Fashion Revolution, and Claire Press is a fashion journalist, author of Wardrobe Crisis, How We Went From Sunday Best to Fast Fashion. They join me now. Welcome both.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Melinda, can I start with you? Slow fashion, I mean, what does that mean?
It means considering what goes into the clothes that we make from a perspective of the people that make it and the effect on the planet. It's looking at how long it actually takes to make a garment and allowing that time for the garment to follow its path and not racing to get it to market within weeks. So it's considering how much work goes into it and actually communicating that story to customers so they understand what goes into it.
Are consumer expectations sort of out of sync with those realities?
Yeah, I think that people want clothes now. They want it immediate. The trends are coming off the catwalk into the shop floor within a matter of weeks now instead of months. And so there certainly is an expectation that you can, you know, sew up a whole dress within days. And that the reality is that you need a lot longer to produce clothes in a responsible fashion. And so we're trying to sort of communicate that so people can slow down their consumption habits and resist that impulse buy.
It's like all those sort of ethical processes. I mean, in any area, they tend to take longer, don't they? I mean, we were given such a heads up for this in 2013, the Rana Plaza collapse, Bangladesh, 1,000 factory workers died. I mean, that's the reality of fast fashion, isn't it?
It is. When you don't have visibility on your supply chains, those kind of accidents can happen, and they certainly happened before Rana Plaza and have happened since. Mm. So when a system is opaque as it is, such as the fashion industry, what you can't see, you can't fix. And certainly thousands of people are toiling in conditions that are less than desirable. And that's the pressure on them to produce the vast quantities of clothing. We're now up to, I think it's 150 billion garments per year are being produced in the fashion industry.
Wow.
So the makers at the bottom of the supply chain are the ones that most often are wearing that impact.
Claire, how did we get to this point? I mean, fashion used to be a far slower affair.
Absolutely. And just listening to Mel there talk, we're just in a position where it's more, 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 faster, faster, faster. Mm. We live in an impatient society. We expect everything immediately. You look at social media, you look at the pace of change. We just want everything now. What's happened as the cycle of fashion has sped up is that we've lost that connection that was once so deep with how our clothes were made. So, Jonathan, if you think back to when your mother was young, perhaps she was sewing, perhaps her grandmother taught her, or her mother taught her, or she was taught in school. Mm. We used to have a much stronger bond with this idea of how things were made. We were able to, as you mentioned earlier, darn stuff. I mean, when was the last time you darned?
Well, I wonder how many of us, if we have a bit of mending like that done, do we refer it back to that generation? You know, are those...
Oh, can you help us, Grandma?
Yes,
yeah, I think we do.
Right.
Yeah. I think we do. But actually, it's interesting, Jonathan, because there is a resurgence now that they're in this interest in mending and in these more traditional crafty skills. You
right.
know, I like that phrase, craftanoon. People are taking up this stuff as a fun activity on their weekends in their downtime. And I think that speaks of a yearning towards reconnecting with made by hand and skill and craft and things. So you're actually finding a lot of younger people are really interested in learning those skills that perhaps they weren't taught around knitting, mending, sewing culture.
But, I mean, the majority thing, isn't it? I mean, Melinda, there's a paradox built into this. I mean, fashion, to me, the very word speaks of immediacy. It speaks of disposability. It speaks of, you know, here today, something different tomorrow.
Yes, it does. But you find now, talking about slow fashion and making and mending, some of the biggest brands in the world are actually encouraging their customers to hang on to their garments for longer and to mend them. Now, it might seem counterintuitive, but that is actually the trend, and I hope it's a permanent one, that we're seeing. And you've got brands such as Levi's, Patagonia, Nudie Denim, actually having repair shops on the high street. So it visible in very high traffic shopping centres. You can walk in and they're encouraging you to bring your garments in. They'll repair them for free. Now, these are the same brands that are selling you that product. They want you to hold on to it for longer. They realise now that I think that rapacious demand for newness has got to slow down. They're seeing those impacts as well. And they're now taking on that sense of responsibility and offering those services, which you would never have seen years and years ago. In the US, Patagonia have a vehicle called the Warnwear van that actually drives across the North America, repairing people's goods, and they've got the largest repair facility in North America. So the very brands that are producing clothing, high quality clothing, let's be real about it. Yes. Clothing has to be of a decent quality to have a chance to be repaired. They're offering those services now. So slow fashion is not just only the preserve of small, independent, fair trade brands. It's now hitting the high street, as it were, which is really encouraging.
I mean, there's an interesting thing in that, isn't there, Claire, about quality, about what we're prepared to pay, whether we would pay, rather than $80 for each of these items, three of them, I'll pay $240 for one of them that'll last three times as long.
It's such a tricky thing, isn't it? Because I think that we have a whole generation that's been trained to expect cheap clothing.
Yep.
And to try to shake that up and say to someone, no, you need to pay three times more and have something that lasts longer but have less garments, that's a hard sell. And that is one of the reasons why, with Fashion Revolution Week going on, we try to start more conversations around what the true cost of a garment is and where a garment's value lies. But I know that I relate to it. You know, it's hard to be told you can't have stuff that you used to having. So it is a tricky thing.
I want more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about slowing down fashion with Melinda Tuohy. She's the Australian convener of Fashion Revolution, and Claire Press, a fashion journalist, author. Her book, Wardrobe Crisis, How We Went From Sunday Best to Fast Fashion. This is Blueprint for Living. Melinda, even if I do walk into the shop and I do say to the poor person behind the counter, where did this come from? Who made it? I mean, what's the chances that they'll know?
Look, some brands are actually educating their workforce from the retail floor back into the production side as to how they can communicate to customers and what information they can tell them. So certainly we hope that more now are able to actually respond to that question, and we do encourage the question to continue being asked, because it actually is tracked and it goes back up to head office, and they do count how many people are actually asking that question. But I think what we're trying to actually encourage is, before you get to that store, actually think, A, do I need something? And B, if I do a bit of research as to where I'm going to buy it from. If your values are such that you do care about who makes your clothes and the conditions that they're made in, then treat your clothing as investments rather than as disposable items. And when you buy investments, you do your research. You do your due diligence. When you're buying a washing machine, you want to know about its warranty. You want to know if you can repair it locally. Do that same research, because I can tell you the amount of information that these brands are now publishing on their responsibility. They've got pages on their websites. There's actually a lot of information out there, but it does mean that we need to stop, slow down, do that beforehand, and you can actually be armed with quite a lot of information before you get to the till.
And yet, Claire, I mean, unlike a washing machine, which is a sort of a rare purchase in which we do a fair bit of due diligence, clothes are this impulse thing. We go out, we window shop for therapy, we buy stuff on impulse.
You know, actually, my washing machine broke recently, and increasingly increasingly appliances are also designed for built-in obsolescence. Yep. And that stuff is irksome. You know, I want things to last. And when you do buy something that you have invested time, money and thought into, you don't expect it to break. You don't want it to, but that's a problem.
I expect my washing machine to last 10 years. I don't necessarily expect this shirt to do likewise.
No.
Why do those things not align?
It's interesting, isn't it? Increasingly, Jonathan, we are buying clothes to throw them away. And this is kind of my personal bugbear. I hate the waste of it. Clothing shouldn't be disposable. But if you buy perhaps a t-shirt for $10, perhaps $20, are you really going to think that deeply about whether or not you hang on to it when you get bored of it? And if you do pass it on, are you going to think very carefully about where it ends up? I hope that we are starting to think a little bit more carefully about what happens to garments at the end of their usefulness to us. And increasingly, we know that textiles are ending up in landfill in Australia. I think we dispatch $500 million worth of clothing to landfill every year. That's a crazy statistic.
And Melinda, if I do buy that t-shirt for $10, do I automatically make the association that, given, you know, the way the market system works, that that must have been produced for next to nothing by somebody paid even less?
Look, I think we're in danger of oversimplifying the issues and conflating a very, very, very complex topic into a cheap is bad, expensive is good. And I know that's something that's probably really boring for most people to hear, because we do want to have a quick answer.
Yep.
Not everybody wants to do a deep dive into this industry like Claire and myself. But the simple fact is that price is not the only indicator of the conditions our clothing is made in. And so I come back again to finding out more about the company that you're purchasing from. Certainly, we know that the amount of wages that go into the actual cost of goods is extremely low. It's even less than transport. It's less than the cost of cotton and inputs. So one of our biggest asks during Fashion Revolution Week also is to encourage brands to look at the wages they're paying their workforce. Mm. Minimum wages aren't enough. We need workers to receive a living wage. But certainly some of the biggest brands in the world do have living wage initiatives. They're making in some of the safest and cleanest factories because the reputational risk is too high not to.
Right.
It doesn't mean that the workers are taking home the wages that they should be, and that is an industry issue that can't be solved by one brand alone. So cheap clothing, is not necessarily made in the worst conditions at all. And I think that those brands that don't have the largest reputations, that you don't hear of as much as we do, are the actual ones that have the higher risks, that are not addressing the issues.
And I guess just quickly and finally, Claire, I mean, this, if there's to be change here, it's about awareness, it's about consumer-driven, I'm imagining.
Absolutely. And you know what? It's not a depressing story, actually. It's a heartening story. I think we're seeing a bit of a tipping point. And when we talk about slow fashion, I often like to make the analogy with slow food and the slow food movement. Mm. More of us are more interested in finding out the provenance of the stuff we buy, whether it's cheese and wine and bread, or whether it's actually a dress or a pair of jeans. We want to know, is it healthy for us? Has it been produced with chemicals? Is it local? Can we shop local? Who made it? All that stuff is cool. It's storytelling and it's empowering. And I reckon that actually we are getting there. We're moving towards a better place with this stuff, and it's cool.
We definitely are.
Nice questions. It may be a slow change, but perhaps that's all part and parcel. Thanks both. Melinda Tuohy, Australian convener of Fashion Revolution, and that's a thing that's been happening, Fashion Revolution Week. Claire Press is with us too, fashion journalist, author of Wardrobe Crisis, How We Went from Sunday Best to Fast Fashion. This is Blueprint for Living. We're going to put some fungus under the microscope next. Stay with us.